Welcome, everybody, to our special podcast celebrating 100 weeks of reviewing X-Men comics on comicattack.net via the Uncanny X-Piles column. I am the comic book clergyman, Jeff Jackson, and with me are my fellow X-Piles reviewers. The guy who gave Rick Remender the idea to put Deathlok in the pages of Uncanny X-Force, the Spider-Man geek, Dan Brienne. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good.
Awesome. And the guy who is hoping Aisha Tyler will play Storm in an upcoming X-Men film, Infinite Speech. That's true, though, right?
Actually, no.
No, she wouldn't really fit, would she?
Nah.
No, well, all right.
She needs one of those Rob Liefeld-esque big gun-toting pouch-wearing characters.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That'd be great. Really great. And also with us for his maiden voyage into the world of podcasting, the man who considered growing a mullet, wearing a bandana around his neck, and tattooing an M on his face just to be like Bishop, the man with all the great questions, Moses. How you doing, Moses?
Hello. I'm doing well. Hello. I'm honored to be with such geeky and nerdy people like you. I feel in awe of everyone in your presence here.
You know what this means, that the rabbit hole is getting deeper.
Yes, I realize that. My wife pointed that out to me as well.
Yeah. I'm just dragging you down with me, buddy. So, how's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Doing well.
Pretty excellent.
Ready to
yourself?
Get this started.
Pretty excellent. That was nice. Very good.
How's Jeff doing tonight?
Jeff is good. I had a nap this afternoon, and then I started reading. Decapitated Dan sent me a bunch of old Animal Man issues, and so I was reading those, and so I'm a little bit creeped out, but I'm okay. And I also, today was a good reading day. I also finished up reading Why the Last Man, my entire hardcover collection. So I finished the last one and got a little misty-eyed there at the end. So it's good stuff.
But that's not what finished that series.
It's good. So, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about X-Men books. So, how do the X-Piles work?
Well, here's how the Uncanny X-Piles work. Every week, Dan, Speech, and Jeff divvy up the week's worth of comics of X-Men comics. We review them. We rate them. We pick our favorite one, or at least, you know, the least hated one of that week, and post them for you on comicattack.net. Our fearless leader, Andy Legal, and I.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
We're reading off the script, and I guess Jeff meant this part for himself. But
yeah, I did. Sorry.
Okay.
So me and Andy.
Our fearless leader, Andy Legal, and Jeff, the clobbering clergyman, started the X-Piles when comicattack.net first started. And for almost 2 years now, the X-Piles have been helping folks figure out what to buy, what to borrow, and what to burn. And there has been a few what to burns.
There have been large funeral pyres.
Like Darth Vader-sized funeral pyres.
Exactly.
But there's been some good ones in there, too, so we can't throw out the baby with the bathwater, as they say.
That's true.
Okay, so for the 100th pod, the 100th post of the X-Piles, we wanted to do something special, and since most of us talk weekly on other comicattack.net podcasts, it just made sense to gather and chat about this week's worth of X-Books. So the first question that we're going to have is for everyone to chime in here, and since we're all an expert of sorts on all things X, what is it that got you hooked on X-Men? Who's going to start?
Let's see. I have to say my first entry into the world of X-Men came from one Christmas or birthday or something like that. My mom got me a box of like assorted Marvel comics. It was a comic book collector kit. And it was like from the Sears catalog or something like that. And so it had just an assorted, you know, box full of comics. And there was there were a couple of issues. It was around issue 250 of Uncanny X-Men. And it was the X-Men, at the time it was like Havoc and Psylocke and Colossus and Dazzler and that group, and they were, so it was like the Australian Outback group, and they were in the Savage Land. And anyway, there's something about it. I kind of dove right in, and it kind of was really interesting. And so then a couple years later, of course, then X-Men number one with Claremont and Lee came out, and that was really my big jumping on point. And then the cartoon and all of that stuff. So I just kind of got really hooked, and was kind of immediately drawn to this whole little world. So.
Very
awesome.
Cool.
Who's next?
Yeah, I'll go next. Mine was more of a sort of a gradual thing that got me hooked in the X-Men. My first, I'm trying to remember, think back, my first exposure to the X-Men, and it would probably have to be Wolverine. I used to, when I would buy comics, or actually my mom would buy me some comics, she'd buy me the Marvel Comics Presents.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
Yeah, which at the time mostly featured Wolverine. Wolverine seemed to be in at least one of the stories, right? So
It took me forever to figure out that was a separate title than the regular Wolverine. I don't know why. Because it had the same logo. Anyway.
Yeah, the font was the same and everything. Yeah, I remember that. So there was that. So I guess my real introduction to the X-Men was through Wolverine there. And there was always, a guest appearance by other characters in there. And also before the 90s X-Men cartoon, wasn't there this really crappy cartoon film of the X-Men that had really horrible voice acting in it?
Pride of the X-Men.
Pride of the X-Men, where Pride Wolverine X-Men. Had an Australian accent.
Yes, that's correct.
So actually, you have to say, to me, when you watch if you watch those, I have that on VHS. And the animation is actually done by the same animation company that did G.I. Joe, the G.I. Joe cartoon. And so the animation style is actually awesome. It's just the voice acting that really sucks.
The voice is just horrible, yeah. So that was I from what I can remember, that was my first complete introduction to the actual X-Men team. And then it went on from there. And I just thought the whole idea of being born with powers that only manifest themselves like during or after puberty. I thought that was super intriguing, and that's basically what got me hooked. And there was just so many imaginative sort of power sets that the creators gave these folks. Back then I thought Cyclops was cool back then.
back then. Notice how he put the emphasis on that.
There's such a diverse group of powers and diverse group of people that and mutants that just have to work together, and I thought that's what was intriguing, and that's what got me hooked on the X-Men.
Nice.
Let me see. I actually, it was funny because mine would be there a couple of appearances on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And then there was Pride of the X-Men, which I thought was cool. But a buddy of mine invited me to walk the 3 miles to the comic book store that was the closest to us at the time. And I ended up picking up a copy of God Loves, Man Kills. And that was it. Yeah, that was it. That pretty much did it. And I stayed in the long boxes picking out X-Men comics for quite some time that day. And that was it from there. So, yeah, part of the X-Men, the horrible animation during the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Siberiad! I am Siberiad!
Cyclops looks... he just looked horrible with the two little dotted red spots for his eyes. But, I mean, back then it was still cool, but...
There's so many... I have that episode also on VHS.
And well, they have crazy. The whole series on DVD now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Yep. Because it's on Netflix.
Why did the X Mansion have a labyrinth of psychedelic spinning and life?
What was that called? The Maze of Madness. it was like. Of course, they have the Danger Room, so they also have to have something as wacky as the Maze of Madness, which was just this like, this crazy like surreal.
Drug induced.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Well, it was what It was the '80s. It was the what mid like what 80, 88, somewhere around the, around there. I think it was earlier
than that with the Spider-Man and Amazing Friends.
Yeah.
Okay. You're talking about that. That yeah. They kept that psychedelic just.
And the plots made no sense. I mean, and who was writing those? I mean, it was just, oh my god.
Hey, but we thought jumped into a pool filled with alcohol. And he was
but we loved it, didn't we? I mean, we ate that up with a spoon. It was awesome. How about you, Moses?
Yeah, I got into X-Men mostly because of the cartoon. Everyone was kind of psyched up about that and when I was in grade school, and so I started watching that. Well, my first comic was the X-Men number 13, and that was the conclusion of the Hazard story.
Oh, God, that's horrible.
Yeah. I literally, you know, I jumped into, you know, part two of a story that I didn't know anything about, but it was one of those, I was homesick from school, and Mom went to the convenience store to get some stuff for me, and she came home with the comic book because I had been watching the cartoon. And from there, I kept getting more issues. I got all the back issues back to number one and started collecting Uncanny X-Men, X-Force, X-Factor.
Wow.
Generation X when it came out. And I collected pretty consistently till just about the Onslaught saga, and that's when I got sick of all the crossovers and all the other issues I was going to have to buy, so I quit collecting then, and I still haven't started. I just read trades and stuff like that now, but that was how I got into it.
Hazard sucks so bad that no one has dared to mention him since that issue. I mean, he was supposed to be Xavier's like childhood friend, but nobody mentions Hazard. It's like, oh, this guy sucks so bad. So,
he's not even on the like worst X-Men list.
Nobody even knows who he is. It's like, let's just not think about that. If
let's hope everybody forgets about him.
If we ignore him, he doesn't exist. Oh God. Well, that's cool. It's funny how, I mean, a lot of us, there's a lot of common threads, you know. Between, you know, how all of us kind of jumped in. So, that's good.
Just took me way back. That horrible Australian accent for Wolverine.
It was so bad.
Yeah, that was bad.
And I do remember sitting there even as a kid thinking, I'm like, Canadians don't sound like Australians, do they?
do they? Exactly.
Hey, but the good thing that came out of that cartoon was the X-Men arcade game was based on all those character designs, and that was an awesome arcade game.
Yeah, that was. Yeah.
I actually have that on my Xbox.
Really?
Yeah, downloaded it a while back.
Nice.
Yeah, I have the iPhone version.
Really? There's an iPhone version?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And that's where Wolverine's special power was the adamantium laser blade, I think.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Because he could have a ranged attack by sparking his adamantium claws.
Okay, I'm looking up the arcade game on the App Store right now.
All right.
Yeah, you got to download it. It's classic.
All right.
Well, keep this moving. Well, tonight we're going to do what we usually do on the column, and we're going to review this week's books. We're going to rate them, give our picks of the week, and we'll also have several great questions that were posed on the ComicAttack.net forums, and then we'll close out with some X-Men trivia to see which of us is the biggest X-nerd.
Actually, we're not going to do the X-Men trivia because we got so many. Yeah, sorry, I should have changed that. But we got so many questions that we're going to go through the questions. So,
well, we've got six books: Astonishing X-Men 52, New Avengers 28, which is a tie-in to the AVX story, Uncanny X-Force 28, awesome, Wolverine and the X-Men 14, X-Men Legacy 270, and Extreme X-Men number 1, which makes my stomach hurt. So let's just go ahead and pick now. Yeah, you're already that. That's a little prequel to how I feel about that issue.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, Dan, you wanna dive in?
Yeah, sure. Let's dive in. So we start off with Astonishing X-Men number 52, written by Marjorie Liu, artist is actually there's co art duties here by Mike Perkins and Gabriel Hernandez Walta. All right. So so I just read this, so it's pretty fresh in my mind. This story picks up, basically kind of runs parallel to the previous issue. So the previous issue was, of course, the wedding issue, which, if you remember, at the end of it, had Wolverine didn't know what he was going on, didn't feel too well, and he went up against a tree and his stomach kind of exploded.
that happened.
That happens sometimes. So it was a little confusing, and this issue wasn't really any better. I don't know much about the Karma character, and this is where this issue focuses. It's what was going on with Karma during North Star's wedding. So I'm really unfamiliar with this character, aside from the fact that I know she can hop around, or she can basically possess people or any living thing for that matter. Now, what was really off-putting, I think, was the co-art duty. I'm not a fan of Mike Perkins' art in this issue. He's done great work in the past on other titles, but I don't think this is for him. I don't like his faces. I don't like the way he does the body language. I preferred the Walta portions of this book. They seemed to better. They were easier to read. The story in the Walta depicted panels focuses on a bit of backstory for Sean. Is that how you say it? Sean?
I don't Coy. Know. Shan
Coy Man. Shan Coy Man?
I don't know. Who knows?
Anyways, Karma. So, so we get a little bit of a peek into what makes her run. And she's essentially, ever since she lost her leg, really, but it's been a long time coming. So I guess she's had a really sort of bumpy past. She's contemplating, like, essentially what even she's doing there. I mean, everything she's experienced with the X-Men, whether it's good or bad, the good didn't outweigh the bad for her. She thinks she'd be in just as, a shitty a place if she hadn't been with the X-Men. So she doesn't really see what the point of it all is, I guess. Afterwards, she follows Wolverine. Has set up some sort of unofficial meeting, so that's kind of that was kind of cool. They were going to Gambit, so I'm kind of like, okay, there's inclusion of other characters, and we get some funny scenes with Warbird, which I'm kind of growing to like as a character. But then we get to the meat of the story, which is the last sort of 4 to 5 pages, where it kind of ties in with the ending of the previous issue. So this is where you really find out that it kind of runs parallel. And I enjoyed that aspect of it. And then it all, of course, ties back to what happened 2 issues ago, but we won't get into that. The part that I found confusing, again, because of the art, where it just seemed like we were supposed to know this woman that Karma ends up facing. Only just now did I realize that we saw her just in a couple of panels earlier in the book in the Walta-drawn portions of the book, because they look nothing alike. So it's kind of like,
yeah,
who is this? What's going on? So that didn't work well. It didn't work well at all. And then it just essentially the last panel is the Wolverine stomach explosion thing. So you kind of you get a bit more of a clue, because it's this woman in red that not to spoil it, but she's the one that caused that. So we don't know where this is going to lead. So there wasn't really a conclusion to the issue. I didn't see much of a point to it. I didn't really like the art. Are we going to go ahead and do like the numeric ratings for this, like usually do?
I figure we could, if anybody wants to chime in, they can, and then you can give
okay,
it a rating.
That sounds good. So as it stands, yeah, I didn't really much enjoy the issue. There was a lot of confusing about it. There was a couple of good parts. Walta's art was better than Perkins.
I agree completely.
I do too.
your review is exactly how I felt about this entire issue. I like that they're trying to do something with Karma, but just because, I like her character, and she has had a pretty crappy existence since she first appeared in New Mutants number one. And it's so you know that, but everything that you said, I echo. Who is this Walta person? I love that art. Should have done the whole book.
Exactly, that's what I was thinking.
Which one was Walta doing? The
middle portion.
Yeah, like the watercolored sort of.
The flashback, right?
Yeah.
Okay, the flashback portion.
Yeah.
Really, because the best part about that was the humpback whale. Wolverine's face looked like he got slapped by a skillet. It was just all smushed in.
Yeah, it's
and
a little bit smushed.
I just felt there was more storytelling in the cover than there was in the entire book.
Uh huh.
Oh,
I mean, if you look at
the cover artist?
You look at Dustin Weaver and Rachel Rosenberg did the cover, and there's more storytelling and depth and feeling in that cover than there is in the entire issue. I mean, if you look at it and really take it apart, I mean, just the amount of detail in it and just the character herself. Other than that, the only great thing about this was the maggots pouring out of the eyeballs and the humpback whale.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's a pretty cool whale. And it's kind of sad when you're reading an X title that's got all these pretty good characters in it. And what catches your eye and excites you is a damn humpback whale and maggots pouring out of the eyeballs.
Yeah,
I just wasn't too. And I mean, the story didn't move me all that much. And like I said, Wolverine looked like he got slapped by a frying pan.
Yeah, that was a bad model of Wolverine.
At least the height was accurate for once.
That's true.
It looks like a depiction of Wolverine I did back in the sixth grade.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Oh, well, hey.
But there you go. All right, rate
it. I'm not current on. I'm reading anything currently right now, so I'm jumping in on all of these in the middle. As far as just picking up this book and not knowing the context, the story was kind of meaningless. It didn't seem to move me anywhere with wanting to know more about what happened beforehand, or, you know, I want to know why Wolverine exploded, but, you know, it didn't seem to be that gripping of a story.
It was the jalapeno poppers he had at the wedding.
Those are risky to serve at a wedding.
They are, yeah. All right, Dan, rate it.
Yeah, cover, I'll give it... can we do 0.5s? Have we ever done 0.5s for...
Sure, yeah.
All right, a 7.5 for the cover. I really liked, 75% of the cover. The detail is fantastic. It's definitely the best part of this book. Writing was, I give it a 5, just because there's just nothing. Like you guys said, there's nothing gripping about this. There's no real point to it, I found, but I guess maybe it'll tie back later. Anyways, whatever. The art, I gave it a 6, a mediocre 6. I mean, Yeah, whatever. A 6. Not much to say about that. Relevance, a 2. I really didn't see the point at all. No relevance to much that's going on, in my opinion, anyways. So there you have it.
There you go.
I'll give the cover an 8, everything else a 2. And that's me being generous.
Yeah.
Because the whale was kind of nice. And there was maggots pouring out the eye. Like, I like kind of the creepy, artwork, but... Like I said, the maggots and the whale really got me going. That was it. So, yeah, 2.
Yeah, I'd agree. All right, Gid, you want to move to the next one?
You mean a much better title
than
this one?
I don't know. Depends on what you say.
Okay. Depends on what I say. All right, New Avengers number 28.
No, it's just Avengers.
Oh, why do I keep saying new? Goodness.
It's the new issue, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, my apologies. It is Avengers number 28. So, what we have here is basically a Red Hulk-centered story, which I can honestly say I thoroughly hated this character upon his very first appearance. And several, over the past couple of months, I've learned to tolerate him. But I will say that Bendis wrote a pretty decent Red Hulk story that kind of gives me a tad bit more respect. He's questioning his place because he pretty much knows what he is, but he's still questioning his place on the team and the fact that he and Captain America are the only two real soldiers, I guess, per se. They have a certain bond that he will never have with the rest of the team, and he knows that he's there because Captain America basically co-signed for him, but doesn't know exactly what. And Cap has done this to several characters that are on the Avengers. He's basically co-signed for them and not giving too much detail to the rest of the team, so they pretty much question, but everybody has so much respect for Cap anyway, nobody's going to challenge his decision. So pretty much he gets it in his mind that he needs to assassinate Cyclops, which is an idea I'm all for. I figure, hey, if you want to go ahead and assassinate Cyclops, awesome. I was behind him from the moment he said that. And this was just, this shows, I think, at least as far as I know, because I don't read the Hulk title that features him, is that he transforms back into Thunderbolt Ross for the assassination attempt. You know, he gets to Utopia as Red Hulk, but then transforms to Ross after studying the Phoenix Five. So he's thought of everything with his fiberglass gun. He has a knife made of bone, you know, and no metal on him. You know, and he gets the shot, and lo and behold, Emma shows up, you know, one of the Phoenix Five. And apparently she hints that she could just turn off the Hulk part of the Hulk brain of these guys who can change, but Ross's power doesn't work like that, and he's trying to warn her. He transforms, and then the fight ensues, and it's a brutal one because he's just that type of character, and they know that. But unfortunately, they show Cyclops pretty much getting the better of him, and it takes Magneto and several members of the Phoenix Five to put him down. And I think the issue worked better as on an emotional level, and giving us a better look at who the Red Hulk is, especially if you don't read the Hulk title. It's one of his better appearances. And basically, they kick his ass and send him back to the Avengers with a message on his chest. And he's pretty pissed now.
They drop him off. They're just like,
oh, man, that
boom.
Was, yeah, literally drop him off. You know, but I have several issues with this because I want to know when it takes place. Because as we all know, reading Avengers versus X-Men, he just got his arm ripped, which Simonson does show the left arm with the bone sticking out of it. He just got his arm ripped, and they didn't know that these guys were in Wakanda, but they drop him off after they beat his ass in Wakanda. And as of now, they're also in the homeland of the Iron Fist. So I don't know, timing wise and as of when everything takes place, I think this one kind of drops the ball. Story wise, I do think that Bendis continues to write a very strong Avengers book. Simonson's artwork is kind of where, like, my heart hurts because I love this guy's work growing up. This issue just didn't hold up to a lot of that. There were just certain scenes that just seemed to be just way over the top. And I don't know. I just didn't. It didn't hit me like it used to. So I'll just say that this is not one of his better looking recent issues. And it looks like he was doing a pretty quick job on it. Though yeah. The fight was pretty cool. I mean, it was big. It was superhero-y. It was splash page-y. And it was everything you would expect from all these really, really powerful characters going back and forth at it. So, you know,
right.
I'll leave it at that. That part was fun, but it seemed after that it was just kind of mediocre-ish, which shouldn't be said in the same breath as Simonson.
Okay, there's a panel where all of the Avengers are standing around a table, like a Thanksgiving meal. I'm not exactly sure what. But in the top left-hand corner, there's Hank Pym as Giant Man. And draped over him is Squirrel Girl.
Wouldn't Tigra be upset?
I mean, and how is he holding her? Like, what is that comfortable? Like, what?
Yeah, her hips kind of sideways, and she's kind of like,
oh,
I guess her feet are on War Machine's shoulders. I don't know.
Yes, the art. Poor Walt. I mean, they've got to stop. They've got to stop with these artists, these old guys. I'm sorry. But I mean,
no, I don't think it's an age thing, because I've seen Joe Sennett just pump out some fantastic looking art, and the guy is in his 80s. I honestly think it's a time thing. I honestly do think it's a time thing.
Well, this, yeah, this is.
And does anyone else think that in a lot of these panels, Red Hulk looks like Hellboy without the horns?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I did think about that. That huge page of Red Hulk's face.
Yeah.
Which is actually the best shot on here, is that page.
Ugh,
but yeah, I was like, wow, that looks like a big Hellboy.
Yeah. I did like how the narration panels were. You know, I liked how it was kind of separated from the rest of the panels. So the panels themselves could kind of stand on their own. But then you had these kind of columns of text, which I thought that was just an interesting choice. Different. So
yeah, I thought that was a good storytelling technique. Not as much dialogue in the panels,
right?
And more just the narration.
They especially worked in the sneaking portions of it, because you know you'd expect it to be quiet, right? There shouldn't be any dialogue, so I think it worked well there, especially.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you though. Good review.
Though I find it funny that when he transforms to Red Hulk, the mustache goes away.
Yeah, where does it go?
The hair stays, but the mustache goes away.
And did his clothes grow back? Or did he pack those?
No, he had a backpack.
Oh, he had a backpack. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
He is one prepared soldier.
I have to go back and look at that, cause, yeah.
And he had the stretchy pants, so he wouldn't be naked.
That's right.
As all Hulks do.
Yes, as all Hulks do. So for the cover, I'll give the cover a 4. Story, I do give the story an 8. Relevance, since all the like bouncing around and like dropping the ball just time wise, I'm giving it a 4.
Yeah. All right. Uncanny X-Force number 28. You guys are gonna hate me for this, but I did not like this issue. Not one tiny bit. Do we have to go to another alternate horrible timeline. future timeline? Come on. Like, what I loved about this story so far was that, you know, you had the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants reforming, and oh, by the way, this is written by Rick Remender and art by Julian Totino Tedesco. And you have to also include color art is different this issue. I thought it was going to be what's his name, but it's color art is Justin Ponser. So anyway, the Brotherhood came back last issue, and they were awesome, and they did some really they really screwed up the X-Force. I mean, they got the upper hand. Things were great. Gateway got killed. All this stuff, and then
say that with excitement, man.
I know.
Well, it was a little bit. Like I said, when I came in on X-Men, Gateway was there. He was their mode of transportation. So there was a little bit of sadness there. But honestly, I thought Gateway already died. I thought he died in. Remember that Mike Carey and Chris Bocciolo run where they were going around and killing all the teleporters and all the.
I think you might be right.
The Children of the Vault. I thought he was already dead until he showed up again in X-Force. Anyway, so I had already grieved, I guess, is my point. So here we go right back into Ultimaton, who is this Weapon X Sentinel type thing that has been hanging out with X-Force. But now that Phantom X is dead, he has no control over Ultimaton, and so basically they're using him as a bomb to blow up X-Force. So in the last, you know, second of Gateway's life, they decide to use his power to jump, and they just jump blindly. They teleport blindly, and they jump into the future, and they're greeted by Deathlok, who at first we kind of think is the Deathlok that's been on their team previously. So, what number is that, Dan?
It's L-17, Unit L-17.
This one or their version?
Well, I assume it's a version of Unit L-17.
Okay, got
it. It's just not the version, because he does have the X badges and everything.
Yeah.
And he's got Wolverine's claw thingy, so it is a version of him, but not the Prime.
Okay. Yeah. So we get thrown into this future, and there's a whole new X-Force that's there, and Cable, and Hope, and Deadpool, and surprisingly, Punisher is on the team, which I think is a hint of some things to come, based on some things that I've seen in the news. What are they trying to do? They're trying to go somewhere. They're cleaning their wounds. And this group of X-Force is trying to hunt them. And anyway, eventually it all turns out that this future is run by like an evil version of Betsy Braddock. And so Deathlok is really there to actually kill them, because in this future timeline, what's his name, Evan, who is the kid Apocalypse, grows up, he becomes Apocalypse, and
they defeat him,
but then they end up taking over, the X-Force ends up taking over the world, I guess, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Something like
and
that.
And they do like a...
They killed all the criminals. They killed all the criminals.
They preemptively kill criminals before they even do acts of violence.
That's right. So then...
Like Minority Report stuff.
Right.
Yeah, right. Minority Report.
So anyway, so there's this fight with Deathlok, and they're getting... You know, the X-Force shows up, and they're all... talking and all this stuff. And anyway, I guess partly I blocked a lot of this stuff out, because I literally when I found out that it was another Days of Future Past s kind of future, I thought, this has been the one thing. And I know that this is something that has popped up in previous issues of Uncanny X-Force, like when the first arc that reintroduced Deathlok and all of that stuff. There was a lot of future stuff that was there, and it's just I'm just kind of tired of that, and I'm a little disappointed in Remender, because he's been so good on this title, but then in the end, a little spoiler here, Betsy decides that she's just been beaten up in this whole series, and she just decides she just can't take it anymore, so she goes up on a roof and she takes a sword and she plunges it into her gut. And so that's where this story ends. I like that ending. I liked the art. I thought this guy was a better artist that fit this book than Phil Noto, who's been doing the last couple issues. But the tone continues to remain the same, and all this. So so overall, It was okay, but I was just disappointed in the future stuff. I feel like they've got so much stuff going on with the Brotherhood. I don't understand kind of why they're jumping to this. It kind of seemed like a swerve that I just didn't see coming, and not one that I didn't like. So y'all disagree? Y'all love this?
I disagree. I totally love this, but I'm not a regular X-Force reader either, so
okay.
I haven't quite been following what's been going on. What I liked about this is it was a bit more of a standalone issue, so it was easy for me to kind of follow what was going on. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, I'm always keen to have Deathlok in some pages, so that's always cool. I really like the panel where Deathlok basically caves in Deadpool's face.
Yeah, that was great.
That was pretty great. There's a lot of, you know, I thought the art was great, and of course you get those great colors by White, right?
No, it's just that's who I was thinking.
Oh, he's just on the cover, right? He just did the cover.
This is Justin Ponser.
Okay, yeah. Anyways, it's all good. I really enjoyed it. I thought the panel layout was great. The pacing of the story was great. If you're into these little futuristic sort of kind of time traveling stories, it stands on its own, I think, and it was good. I liked it.
Yeah. What'd you think, Moses?
Well, not that I've been reading X-Force lately, so I kind of agree with with Dan, it seemed easy enough for me to jump into this issue. And from what I understand with what X-Force has been is, you know, they've been using lethal force against whoever they deem
Everybody.
Necessary. And what I liked about this is, to me, it was a much more philosophical story. And I think Deathlok even says that somewhere, where this is the logical conclusion of your, you know, the path that you're on. And kind of going with that whole Minority Report thing, I thought it brought up a lot of good, interesting philosophical things about how far ought you go if you know someone's going to commit something, but they haven't done it yet, and, you know, how far does that extend, and what would a society like that believes in that and that acts on that, what kind of society would that be like? And you kind of get that, that's what this alternate future apparently is, there's apparently no crime, but you get killed immediately somehow if you even think about committing a crime.
Right.
So philosophically, I thought it was a very interesting story. But I understand what you're saying, Jeff. I mean, how many alternate futures and whatever do we need to go through?
Right.
This one kind of serves a point, though, because it might change the whole X-Force team dynamic after they come back to the regular timeline, right? It might have an impact, so who knows? Right. Could serve a purpose.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, from what I got from the story, Gateway's push, well, when Betsy borrowed, took over Gateway's power, had him use it, they got pushed 30 years into the future, so it's not like an alternate timeline, it's the same timeline. But because of their interference and the fact that they've just been killing, it leads to this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is so much an alternate timeline. This is what will happen in the 616 if X-Force continues doing what they're doing. And like Moses said, Deathlok is hitting them with the emotional part, like, you know, the morality of it all, which is why he kept the team alive to try, you know, to show them what they've wrought upon the entire world. Mm-hmm. Though I don't know, how is the Punisher still alive? I mean, the guy was in Vietnam.
He got turned into Frankencastle.
Oh, yes, that's right. And he also died and was an angel, so that kind of healed him back too.
Right, exactly.
But I mean, like, I loved I liked the darkness of the artwork. It was dark, it was moody, mm-hmm. and I wasn't too upset with Remender's story. I think it just serves a purpose as giving these guys a break from the Brotherhood, and hopefully the Brotherhood is a serious force, because I hate it when these good, evil groups are brought up mm-hmm. and they're a serious match for the good guys, and then they're just cast aside after that. I want the Brotherhood to give these guys a run for their money, and I want some damage. So this is a good break here, and the whole fight with Deathlok was awesome, and then, you know, he took a lot of the shots to the face and fell off the building, and then that was it. Now, Deadpool has no healing factor anymore, right?
Well, yeah, currently Deadpool doesn't. Yeah,
yeah,
doesn't.
He should be dead. Sorry, he should be dead.
Yeah.
After what happened to him in this issue, there's no amount of gauze and bandaging.
Well, especially after, we'll see what happens to him.
Yeah, I mean, he should have bled out and opened up stitches and wounds a long, long time ago. But, you know, I like his little bit of a dialogue when he calls the other him Old Pool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he said, how's the sag factor since we don't have it?
Right. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty decent issue.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, the other thing, you know, pairing this with Remender also had Secret Avengers 29 come out. And, you know, he's bringing back the Brotherhood, and he brought back the Masters of Evil in Secret Avengers. And that was a great issue. I loved it. So anyway, so in terms of cover, I don't think this is one of, Opeña's best covers. I mean, I think it's an okay cover, but it's not one of his best ones. So I'll give the cover a 6.
You know why you don't think it's one of his best ones?
Why?
There's no Phantom X on the cover. That's why.
Maybe. Well, it says Rochelle Rosenberg, and maybe I don't know if that's a if she's like the colorist or I don't know. Anyway, oh, you know what? It does say White. It says Dean White on colors on the cover, but it says
no. That's assistant editor Jordan D. White.
Oh, maybe, but they don't usually put the editor on the front.
Usually not, but he's not listed at all in the credits. Yeah, that's weird.
That is weird. Okay. In terms of writing, I'll give this one a 5. In terms of the art, I'll give that a 7. And relevance, because I do know that Remender has big plans and all that stuff, the relevance factor, I'll put it at an 8, because I know he'll do something with this. So, yeah. Wolverine and the X-Men.
Wolverine and the X-Men, one of my favorite X-Men titles. Number 14, actually. And this is yet another tie-in, which I thought was going to be one of those light, kind of fun issues. Because, you have Colossus handing Kitty the flowers. So I was like, okay, he's going to ask her out. He's got his powers. He's flaunting around. He wants to see if he can rekindle that fire that they had. And so it opens up with him and Kitty at a table full of seafood, and the first question in my mind is, why the hell does Colossus have food in front of him anyway? He doesn't need to eat or breathe, but that's neither here nor there.
He likes the taste.
So, I mean, he's, they're going back and forth, and he's, he's basically, he's pretty much just high on himself and his accomplishments as one of the Phoenix Five and how much good they've done for the planet. And it's kind of overwhelming because he's parted the sea, and their date is taking place on an ocean floor as the fish just flop around by her feet, which is kind of tacky if you ask me. But, Peter is just kind of jumping the gun, and Kitty just wants him to slow down. And then we flash back to the school and the issues that they've been having ever since the X-Men and Avengers started fighting. You've got the teachers gone, so the classes aren't being taught. You got Bamps running wild. You've got Dupe in a panel, which kind of sucks at that. But Kitty is taking an assessment and going through, and like the only staff left is like Toad, Dupe, Husk, and all of that. But then Peter comes, and he tries to throw his Phoenix power around, but we quickly go to a fight between the Thing and some of the X-Men, and it is one of the most poorly choreographed fights I've ever seen, because Bobby freezes Thing and that's it. Yep. Fight's over, which I thought was real lame. But Bobby seeks out Cyclops and asks him some pretty pertinent questions, because he feels that they're crossing the line now. And if you know anything about the history of the X-Men, they're basically doing to them what they fought against. They're caging and imprisoning the Avengers. They're changing the world by force. Even though they're doing good, mankind isn't earning anything, and you still got Kitty and Colossus going back and forth. So he gets spurned. Colossus does, and he kind of gets pissed off, and he does what overconfident, powerful guys do. They throw temper tantrums, and at that point, he's pissed off his girl because he's jealous of the school, so this and the rest of the X-Men and Krakoa, they stand up to him, and which officially ends in them getting their asses kicked. And he ends up hurting Kitty and gives that old famous Phoenix line when Phoenix gets pissed, but he catches himself and flies off in shame. And I forgot that Bobby kind of had a thing for Shadowcat, so she tells him, he needs to man up, get his ice balls ready if he wants to ask her out and like seafood. But all in all, it was still a good story from Aaron. Aside from the crappy dismissal of Thing, I thought it was real good that he wrote this story, because all the other issues are real, real serious, they're real heavy, and this one here was more comic booky. You got these two former lovers on a date. You've got the big superhero fight, and you've got, Toad dining with Husk skin, old skin.
That's my panel of the week right there.
that was just awesome right there. But the fact that Husk is just nasty enough to leave it around.
And on the gross wall in the back, there's her faces and her two of her faces and an arm, yes, hanging on the wall. That's a great panel. Wow, I love that.
Now, the artwork, Melina,
Jorge.
It was weird. Some of the faces just seemed a little weird. The male faces, the female and the feminine faces were great, but like Colossus's face was just real off to me a whole lot. But the art and colors are still good, and this is still one of the strongest X titles like on the shelf, in my opinion. And I love how Kitty has that much faith in Lockheed, you know, while I'm gone, the dragon's in charge. It was great.
Yeah.
And you get like the most unlikely crew of X-Men going up against Colossus, you know, who promptly tells them they're not X-Men as he kicks all of their asses. But I mean, it's still a great issue and it's a fun one. So,
yeah,
it's not a great week for Deathlok. I tell you that.
Yeah. Right.
In any time period, actually. Yeah. He just owned all throughout the timeline.
Yeah.
Though Kitty faced him 2 miles down pretty fast.
Well, she's fast like that, I guess.
It's tramp.
Yeah.
And what's Dupe? And Dupe has the pouches and the guns, which I thought was kind of cool. But I just don't understand Dupe as a character. I didn't read, what was it, Ecstatic X. Yeah, I wasn't one of the big Dupe fan club people. So you guys can give me your thoughts.
What'd you think, Moses?
I thought it was an interesting and like I said, I haven't been reading all these, but maybe an inevitable story with the Phoenix Five having all these powers, and then Colossus is a good one that to see, you know, taking that power too far, what the consequences are, and you know, personally, you know, he's trying to you know, be all tough with Kitty, obviously. You know, that doesn't work when you have godlike powers trying to just go on a regular date, and then and then getting upset when it doesn't go your way. And he, like Ged said, you know, he kind of throws a tantrum and he ends up, you know, really injuring people. And you know, it wasn't unexpected at the end what happened, where he's like, oh, I realize that apparently I'm being a douche, you know, and he takes off. But I thought it was a pretty good story. I thought it was good.
Good. Rate it, Gid.
All right, I give the cover a 9.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's sweet, man.
Oh,
it's sweet.
Nick Bradshaw. He makes me mad.
All of you really hate, and it's got two of my favorite, like, small characters. It's got Rockslide in there, and it's got the little brood guy.
Yeah, yeah.
and Quentin Quire with the fire extinguisher is kind of funny.
Yeah.
The cover tells a story.
All right. All right.
This really just aggravated me. And relevance, I give it an 8.
What did you rate the other? The writing and the art?
Oh, art. Art-wise, I give it a 7 as well, because like I said, those faces and the chins just kind of looked awkward, and it just looked off a lot. And it was not like it happened in one panel; it was a consistent weirdness to the to Colossus.
Right. All right.
So yeah.
Very good. Okie doke. X-Men Legacy.
X-Men Legacy number 270. 270.
We're going to have to speed it up here.
Yep. Written by Christos Gage. Artist is David Baldian. Baldian. Sure. Okay. All right. So, all right. I won't go too much into detail, but I really like this story. I've been loving X-Men Legacy for the past, at least the past 5 to 6 issues have been pretty solid, if I think back. But this issue was great. Last issue had Miss Marvel. She's now trapped in Magic's Hell Prison. So there was serious doubt put into Rogue's mind after her confrontation with Miss Marvel in the previous issue. And now she's sort of realizing, it's been a bit of a common theme, I think, throughout the X-Men books from this week, maybe a bit last week, is the doubts that some of the X-Men are starting to have about the Phoenix Five and what they're doing. So in other words, once Magic leaves this hell prison, Rogue sort of, she's like, no, this bitch is crazy. I gotta get Miss Marvel out of here, basically. They need to find a way to they need to get people on their side to take down these Phoenix Five. So she's, I think this issue confirms that she's converted. She no longer stands with the Phoenix Five. The art was great. I'm liking David Baldwin's art. His faces are kind of weird, but man, all these detailed dynamic shots, the fight scenes, I think are incredible. These monsters he's created in here are great. I see a bit of sort of Steve Scross kind of inspiration in some of these panels, the angles, and so, you know, I've been a fan of his too, so, you know, it's all great for me. The ending of the issue was great, where Rogue is sort of dumped into some other, she's right in the middle of some sort of conflict on another world, so I'm looking forward to see, well, we only have 5 more issues of Legacy to go, so hopefully it wraps up nicely. Other than that, I don't really have any qualms. Not too wordy. The pace was great. Good insight into the character. The story moved along. It's very exciting. I want to see what comes next. And that Mark Brooks cover, of course, awesome as always. Always awesome.
Yeah.
So, opinions around the table? Good?
I'm pretty much on the same page as you. Great story, great art. This is another one of the strong X titles, and I thought I was the only one that felt the faces were a little bit. I just think it happens when they get really expressive and excited. It looks kind of cartoony.
That's what I like about it, though.
Well, I mean, it just seems like in a serious moment, you don't want the large eyes and the Bugs Bunny effect. I mean, it's just, I don't know. But yeah, it was a fun issue. Looks great still.
Right.
How come they all can't be as good as this?
Yeah, I know. That's true.
And it's getting canceled. The hell.
I know. I just hope that Marvel has the sense to put David Baldwin on some other X book. I love his work. He's one of the new, like the one of my favorite new artists. I think he's. Well, I don't know if he's new or not, but he's new to me. So.
Yeah.
And that's what counts.
That's right. Moses, you got an opinion on this one?
It was cool. I like the art. All the demon monster stuff was pretty neat, even though typically I don't like those kind of stories. And I thought it was interesting with Rogue kind of getting fed up and trying to rescue Miss Marvel. And seeing them team up is always fun, Rogue and Carol Danvers.
Yeah.
So, it was good.
All right. Rate it, Dan.
All right, cover gets a 9. Awesome cover. Yeah. The writing, another 9 for writing. The art gets an 8. You know, again, still the faces, but overall, you can't complain too much about the art. Relevance is, you know, 7.5. Very good relevance as far as the character goes, as far as AVX goes. So there you have it.
Good stuff. All right, Moses, Extreme X-Men number 1.
All right, Extreme X-Men number 1, written by Greg Pak and Steven Stagopia, and art by Dennis Christostomo. Guys, you got to help me out here. Is this a new book, or is this a reboot of an old book, or what is it?
It is in the pages of Astonishing X-Men. Greg Pak did an arc with Mike McCone, and in that story, Cyclops gets pulled into this this world where there are all these various different X-Men, and the whole point of that story was that in order for this world to survive, this evil version of Xavier was basically pulling X-Men in to power this machine to keep the world going, and so Cyclops ends up having to decide between either sacrificing himself for this world to survive, or just cutting their losses and trying to. So he befriends all of these other, the Howlett and Emmeline Frost and Kurt Wagner, and so now this is Greg Pak is taking this, you know, and making it's a new, into a new series. So.
Okay, so the story is about that I guess alternate X-Men people, and there's a bunch of severed Xavier heads that are apparently all strung together in series and very powerful. And then on 616, I guess before all the AVX thing started happening, Dazzler gets called in by Cyclops and to power some machine, and then when they power that thing up, it opens a portal to this other dimension, and then that version of Wolverine and Emma Frost come through, and there's tentacles come after them, and Dazzler gets caught by one of them and pulls back in, and then those other X-Men go after her. And then there's the weird Xavier things, and yeah, I don't know if I could summarize this very well, because it was kind of strange.
It was.
And then, yeah, so yeah, I'm just kind of scanning through all these panels again. Yeah, so a lot of weird stuff, and then the decapitated Xavier head transport them somewhere else.
Yeah.
At the end, and it kind of looks like a Roman Imperial type empire, and then there's some X-Men looking Imperial people at the end, and that's kind of how it wraps up.
This also harkens back a little bit, even though the characters aren't the same, to the Exiles series that was out in the 2000s.
You mean that really cool series that McCone was on?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. With the good mimic?
Yeah. The
really cool mimic. Yeah. All right.
We went there.
You did.
Yes, you did. Quickly, too. Didn't take us long.
Yeah.
So yeah, for a number one issue, not a good jumping on point, because I had no idea what was going on. And very strange story. The art, I thought, was actually pretty good. I kind of liked a couple of those splash pages were actually pretty good. Not a Dazzler fan, so I could care less about that character.
There's three of them.
Do what?
And
I think there's three of them.
Yeah.
There's three, yeah. So, you know, and I can't say that this would make me want to pick up issue number two either. It's just not much here. The splash page when the portal opens up and Cyclops gets blasted with some tentacle juice or something is probably the best part of the issue.
Right.
Because that was kind of it was a good splash page. A lot going on there. Good colors. Good stuff. But
the word that you're looking for,
help me out,
is clusterfuck. This issue that's what this issue was.
Well, I kind of feel like when Danger got hit by the tentacle there and just goes arrrr. that's how I felt.
Like a pirate.
Yeah.
I agree completely. This I mean, I loved that. That Greg Pak,
the Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah, I really liked that, and but this was not that. This was nothing, and this was not Exiles. And the art was just really poor, really, really poor. So, yeah,
I was waiting for Fry and Bender to show up, and Ozymandias, you know, with the big squid at the end, and what is all going on in here?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I will say though that is probably one of the most unique versions of Xavier that.
Well, I mean, there's some cool ideas there, but they just didn't do a very good job of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like what is that? It's me. I'm like, what? How are you an octopus? How does that make sense?
Yeah. Why use
Dazzler as the
as
the anchor to the regular X-Men?
Yeah.
Because she's the only character that it's not taken up in any of the other X-Men books.
Yeah,
that's
right. She's the leftovers, Moses. She's the.
I would have rather had them use Hazard.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note,
okay,
rate it, buddy.
I'll rate it cover 2, writing 1, art. I kind of like the art. Give it a 6, and relevance 1.
Yeah. Good. All right, now is when we pick our most excellent pick of the week. Dan, would you pick?
I went with Uncanny X-Force. I always love me a good Deathlok story.
All right. Speech?
I went with Wolverine and the X-Men.
Right. Moses?
I also went with Uncanny X-Force. I like the philosophical underpinnings of that story.
Philosophical, very good. For me, it was definitely Extreme X-Men number one.
Your least favorite? What the hell?
I'm kidding. That was
anything with Xavier Octopus.
That was
Tentacles has to take the cake.
I'm sorry. I was just replaced by alternate future reality Jeff Jackson, and he liked that. No. I think of all these, I had lots of problems with all these. So I think my favorite out of these was Legacy. So that's what I'm gonna pick. So. We got lots of questions, a lot more than we're going to be able to cover today. We only have about 15 minutes left, so I'm going to throw out a couple of questions. The first one is from our good friend N. Saba Noor, a.k.a. Eli Anthony, and his question is, what are three reasons to love the X-Books and characters, and what are three reasons to hate the X-Books and characters? So let's do Gid, throw out one reason to like the X-Books.
To like the X-Books?
Mm-hmm.
Good history. Good there's a good foundation of stories.
That's good, yeah. That's good. Dan, throw out something that you like.
Diversity of the characters.
Mm. Yeah. Moses, how about you?
I think kind of like what Dan said, the diversity of the characters, the interaction with all the different characters has always been the most interesting thing to me.
I think for me, it's always the social underpinnings of what the X-Men represent, and the places where the X-Men fail. And so this leads me into the reasons not to like it, is that when the X-Men doesn't work is when they're not doing that. It's when they're just telling stupid stories that don't have any, like Extreme X-Men, like that have no relevance to anything. But when there's some kind of social commentary or reflection. I mean, that's what the X-Men were originally meant to be as. So one reason for me to not like the X-Books right now is that they're not doing that very well, I don't think. So
I will say Hazard is a reason. Just kidding. Well, no, he is a reason. But I say a reason to dislike is the that I don't think they're taking advantage of how rich the foundation is. There are some good stories they can pull, especially with the infusion of all the younger characters that they've just put in over the last like 10, 15 years.
Right.
And the foundation that the whole X-Men era of Marvel was built on, I think they are just missing the point. You know, you can still tell brand new, really great stories. I don't think they're utilizing the foundation in some of those older stories in fun and new ways. Hmm. You know, even when they go back to some of the older day storylines or whatnot, they're just really dropping the ball, and I think they're more focused on milking than taking them in a new fun direction for the new fans.
Right.
My main gripe, the reason to hate the X-Books and characters right now, is the inconsistencies within the characters themselves. You take a book like Legacy, who's really strong, which focuses on Rogue, and Rogue isn't very much utilized in the other books, but you take characters like Iceman and Wolverine and right now all of the Phoenix Five are throughout the X-Books, and it just seems like because they're inconsistently written in almost all of these separate issues, it just takes it takes my interest. I'm not interested at all, and there's nothing to invest in them if they're going to keep changing all the time. So,
yeah. All right. Well, another question that was a good one. Thank you, Eli. Another one from our friend Cape Killer, who also is a former reviewer of the X-Piles, put in a ton of reviews for us for a while. All right.
Hey, Sorry, Pandora just kicked on my tablet.
Well, at least you got good music. That's good. All right. He says, what one event or action or reveal hurt mutant storytelling the most?
Hurt
mutant storytelling the most.
I don't want to say just mutant storytelling, but probably a lot of titles were affected by the Onslaught thing and the whole, was that Heroes Reborn, Rebirth.
Right.
It was just horribly done. I mean, it started off okay, you know, the lead in with Legion and everything and the split and who is Onslaught, but then it just fell apart towards the end, and that's one of like the crossovers that really sucked to me.
Mm, right. Dan, what do you think?
Sorry, did you say Dan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Actually, this was a really tough one for me. I missed out on a lot, and probably the most, the events that had the most impact on the mutant line. So, you know, late 80s, early 90s, if any at all, read any of those stories. So I couldn't really think of a specific event or action that really hurt the mutant community as far as the comic books go.
I think it's more has to do with certain writers or there's certain arcs and things like that that end up hurting the X-Men. I think there have been some people have taken some lemons and turned them into lemonade. And I think some people want to look at specific arcs like Morrison's arc or I don't know, Scott Lobdell's arc or whoever, whoever, and say that, you know, or even things like M-Day, you know, those kind of things. But I think there have been some good stories that have come out of some of those things. So, you know, for me, to me, the thing that one thing that really hurt was right after Morrison's run, there was this real, like, people, they just didn't know what to do. And so they were doing all kinds of stupid stuff. Like, you know, Morrison had done such a great job of setting up Magneto as this main villain, and he comes and he wrecks Manhattan. He does all this stuff, and Wolverine, he kills Magneto, kills Jean Grey again, and then Wolverine cuts his head off. And then, literally, in like two issues later, Chris Claremont, you know, and it's all editorially mandated. I mean, you know, they couldn't have said that this is going to be a great idea, but we've got to have Magneto back. So they get Chris Claremont to write this Excalibur book that allows. That just changes everything, and then they put another version of Zorn in another issue, and just all of this stuff, it just didn't make any sense. So, I mean, that's an example, I think, of, you know, something that was done really well, and they just didn't know what to do, so they were just scrambling after Grant Morrison.
What about that whole Joseph debacle? Were you on board with that, or...?
I liked the original Joseph. When you first thought that it was actually Magneto, I liked that. But it wasn't until later that they retconned it and they said, well, he's actually a clone. And then they tied in all this other stuff. And he actually had gone away for a while, and they brought him back in like the late 90s. They brought Joseph back and they revealed all this other stuff. And all of that got really confusing. So, I mean, it's just people just don't know necessarily how to take something that's been done and roll with it. So, so there's been a lot of that in the X universe. So, anything else you guys want to add to that one? No.
Maybe the slow ascension of Wolverine to godhood has a lot of stories.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
that's
he used to be. I mean, because there's no once a character has once there's no worry if he's going to come back or not. I mean, because there was one story in particular. It was in a X-Men annual that kind of is always one of my favorites. They were fighting a guy, I think his name was Horde. He was taking out the X-Men. Wolverine ends up, you know, with this gem, getting all these like godlike powers. And it was a real great story. And his humanity was still there. I mean, he used to be able to get taken out by Sabretooth ripping his throat out. There was a point where he could actually die. Now his healing factor just, about anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so, nah, I don't know why. I think a lot of writers took the cheap and easy way out when it came to Wolverine.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, one more question from, and this one's from Power Listener Shit Dick. What is your favorite X team of all time? Favorite X team of all time.
Yeah, I have a special place in my heart for Generation X. Always been a huge fan.
I love Generation X. Yeah. Good stuff.
I like the X-Men Gold Team from the early 90s. Uncanny X-Men 280 through the 300s there.
Yeah. Storm, Jean Grey.
Storm, Iceman. Colossus, Bishop, Archangel. Yeah, it was cool.
Good group.
I have a special place for the Australian team. Even when Jubilee came on board, I like the fact that they were on the outs. You know, the X-Men were at a spot that you really hadn't seen them in at that point. They had no real home. They were broke, no money, and had to play dead. So that was one of the better teams, though.
Yeah. I think I'm always going to have to go back to. I mean, my favorite team of all, I think, has to be from X-Men number one, the blue team. I loved that team. They were the X-Men. I mean, I liked the gold team, but not as much. And just Jim Lee drawing them, God, that was just so good back in the day. Good stuff. So, well, those are great questions. I wish we could have gotten into more, but we ran out of time. So what's our next part?
Okay, so we still have time to dive into this a bit, I guess?
Yeah. We'll do this.
Okay, so on our other show, The Contest of Champions Live, we like to rank things. So we thought that we could rank the current X titles to give folks an idea of what is great and what needs to go. So here are the titles. Age of Apocalypse, Astonishing X-Men, New Mutants, Uncanny X-Force, Uncanny X-Men, Wolverine and the X-Men, X-Factor, X-Men, otherwise known as Adjectusless, X-Men Legacy. So, Jeff, go ahead. Give us your ranking.
My X-Men power ranking would be Uncanny X-Force, despite what I said earlier, I think is the strongest X-Men book, followed by X-Factor. You know, Peter David just continues to even though right now I'm not really loving a lot of the most recent issues, but anyway, it's still a strong thing. Number three, Wolverine and the X-Men. I think Jason Aaron's got a pretty good. He's doing some kooky things in that book, and I really am liking that. X-Men Legacy, and I would probably put Wolverine and the X-Men and X-Men Legacy kind of tied. I really like both since Regenesis. Both of those books have been really good. I'll throw in Age of Apocalypse. You know, I think that's been a strong book that doesn't really have much to do with anything, but it's just kind of its own little thing, and it's weird, but I'm liking it. Astonishing X-Men is okay, but we're starting to get into some kind of books like, do we really need this? Followed by Uncanny X-Men. Uncanny X-Men is just really not, it's just not doing it for me. I think it's been kind of an abomination, since the relaunch. And that's followed by, Adjectiveless X-Men. You know, Brian Wood's recent arc is just, and what's his name before that? Gishler before that was just not doing very well. And this is just a continuation of that. Wolverine has been a great book, but it, you know, because of what's going on currently, right now we're in the middle of that horrible Jeff Loeb, Simone Bianchi, horrible Return of Sabretooth arc. I would put it way down on the list. That stuff is just horrible. But the other stuff with Cullen Bunn and Paul Pelletier was really, really good. So, and then my last one is, you guys know, New Mutants is just, it is the worst book that it might be the worst X-Men book I've ever read. It is so so bad, so bad.
How are there still New Mutants? It's been around for like 30 years.
You don't want to know.
How are they new?
It was, well, exactly. When Zeb Wells started this run, it was so good. This Abnett and Lanning stuff is just atrocious. Bad. Even
with Regenesis, the roster seemed promising, but it didn't work at all.
Yeah. All right, Speech, give us yours.
All right. Uncanny X-Force is my top one. Then I go with Wolverine in the X-Men, X-Men Legacy, X-Factor, Wolverine, Astonishing X-Men, X-Men. I kind of tie Uncanny and New Mutants together.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I stopped collecting Uncanny after, I think, the third or fourth issue. Mm-hmm. And I've only been forced to read it again because I'm part of this magnificent grouping of people that review X-books, good and crappy.
Wait, so you said after X-Factor, you said what?
Astonishing X-Men.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but I do tie Uncanny and New Mutants because they're both waste of paper.
Right.
If you're buying them digitally, they're a waste of space. Erase them and download something great.
Right. All right.
Like the Squirrel Girl miniseries. I don't know.
Okay.
There is one. Get that.
Yeah. For myself, ranked number one, I got X-Men Legacy. Again, I think it's an awesomely strong book. X-Factor, I've been a loyal X-Factor fan for quite some time, since issue number one, since that relaunch, actually. So X-Factor number two, Wolverine and the X-Men number three. I'm not a regular reader, but it's an entertaining book, if anything else. If nothing else, I mean, it's a good read. Pretty consistently. Uncanny X-Force, again, not a regular reader, but I know how strong this title is. There's a big following, and Rick Remender, you can always count on for some good stories. Age of Apocalypse is getting good reviews as well, so it falls number five. Wolverine, from what I know, has been on a decline. Cullen Bunn hasn't really done much to elevate the title back up.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
It's been good.
So, Wolverine at number six. Then I got Astonishing X-Men. I think Marjorie Liu needs to gain a bit of traction. There's potential there, but it hasn't blossomed yet. So, then Uncanny X-Men, followed by X-Men. I really think X-Men is a worse title than Uncanny X-Men, but not as bad as New Mutants, which falls at number 10 on the list as the worst X title currently available. And is luckily getting canceled in a few issues.
That's right. All right, Moses, since you're not a regular reader, I didn't put you on the ranking.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to have an opinion on these since I don't read anything right now.
Right. All right. Well, close us out there, Moses.
Yeah, be sure to check out everything over at comicattack.net, where we review many other things besides X-Books. There are awesome columns and many other things over there. Check out our podcast, like Contest of Champions Live.
COC!
Tales from the Water Cooler. Discussions with Decapitated Dan. Also, check out our affiliates over at comicrelated.com, and we thank them for sponsoring us. And I would like to thank Jeff and Dan and Speech for allowing me to join in on this podcast. It was fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very much so. All right, so that is it, X-Fans. We just want to thank everyone for listening. Thanks, Dan, Moses, Jeff. Thanks to Andy and Kate for all of their help in getting the Uncanny X-Files to the 100th. Wow, 100 weeks, huh?
That's a lot of weeks.
I know it is.
Almost 2 years.
A lot of X-books, some of them crappy, as we stated earlier.
It's a lot of reviews.
Just remember to keep reading our reviews at the Uncanny X-Files on comicattack.net, and come chat with us about the X-Men stuff on the forums at comicattack.former.com.
All right.
There you have it.
Well, there we go. Thanks, guys.
Excelsior!
Thank you.